favorite musical instrument, kitchen implement, speak and spell, tantric bell, hotkeys, or tchotchkes to the Clinton Street Theater, Southeast Clinton and 26th Avenue in Portland, this Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. Thursday. Dada. Clinton Street. KBOO. At least the haggis arrived at a reasonable hour.
Stay tuned for Stage and Studio with host Ava Lake. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.
Hi there. My name is Ava Lake, and actually you're listening to Art Focus. And this is the show where we talk about art here at KBOO. And today I have a guest that, well, she's been here a couple of times before, at least once with me, Diane Durston. Thanks so much for joining me, Diane.
Thank you, Ava.
So she is the curator at the Japanese Garden here in Portland, which is considered by most people to be the greatest Japanese garden outside of Japan. And who knows, maybe the greatest in the world, right? That is up for discussion, no?
Could be.
But they also have, they have so many things at that garden. It's fantastic. One of the great things that we that they have is an ongoing exhibition schedule, which will probably grow as the years go on. And the show that they have up right now is called A Distant View. And it's the porcelain sculpture of Sue Harumi Fukami. Did I say it right?
That's pretty close.
But he's known basically as Fukami.
That's right.
Worldwide. And then there are also, though, some accompanying photographs that come with it, which are by Jean Vollem.
Yes, and actually those were really key to having the exhibition come together at all.
Jean was a collector of the artist, or...?
Jean was a collector of the artist, and she... found that she and Fukami had some kind of, I don't, almost spiritual connection, in that they really had the same vision, taking images from nature and feelings from nature and translating them for her into photographs. She did the series that's on view. Part of her series is called Ice Cycles, and she was intrigued by ice flows and traveled all over the world. She didn't start photography until she was 60 years old, so she was an amazing person, and as most of your listeners probably know, the Vollem family have been great supporters of the arts for many, many years in Portland.
In Portland. So that's a good background to know. So she was a collector and an artist herself here in Portland, Oregon, who nurtured this relationship with this worldwide, you know, class act ceramic artist that we have showing today.
And in addition to that, I lived in Japan for 18 years. And while I was living there, I met Fukami in Kyoto, where I lived, and was asked when he was showing his work at the huge ceramic competition that's held in Faenza, Italy, every year. He was asked to show his work there, and he did, and won the grand prize. And
what year was this?
This was 1985.
Okay.
And everyone was stunned, because not many people knew of, were aware of his work at that point, and he walked away with the grand prize. I was asked to translate his catalog into Japanese. So that's how I met him, through a mutual friend. And so I've known him really since the 80s, and invited him to come over. And we found that there's this wonderful connection with the work of Jean Vollem, and that they were close friends. She purchased work that then went, there is a piece at the Portland Art Museum, a beautiful piece that's on view now at the museum, and then gave pieces to her five sons.
Wow.
And many of those pieces are on loan to this exhibition as well. So there are 24 pieces total, and half of them are new pieces from the artist's studio, and the other half are from private collections, including most of the volumes and work by a couple of other local collectors, Travers and Vasek Pollock and Greg, Greg Fitzgerald.
Another collector.
Yes.
So now let me ask you. So in 1985, he got this prize. And if you look at his resume, I mean, he's shown all over the world. He's in a bunch of museums. He has also won the Japanese Ceramics Society Gold Medal Award twice. And that's the only artist to ever have done that. When he got this prize, let's say in 85, now we can fast forward to the present day. Is his work on a similar thread, or like what was he doing then compared to what he's doing now? I'd kind of like to follow a little bit about his style and what he did.
Well, he has a really interesting background. He came from a multi-generational family in Kyoto that produced ceramics for everyday wear. Beautiful white porcelain with blue decoration. We've all, I've probably seen it if you're familiar with Japanese ceramics. And he made...
There's a name for it, this glaze, no? Does it have a particular name?
The name for the glaze that Fukami uses is Seihakuji.
Seihakuji. Seihakuji. It's a very specific...
This is not the blue and white glaze that his
family did.
Okay. This is along the lines of celadon. It's similar to celadon.
Right.
So if you're familiar with that light green color, that's celadon is a less transparent kind of glaze. The glaze that Fukami uses is translated as a pale blue glaze. Mm-hmm. It's much more ethereal than celadon, and it's based on a Qingbai glaze from China that was of a similar, very light blue color, almost bird's egg color,
almost icy like.
Yes, right.
Right.
And he was born into this family but didn't want to go into the family business. He wanted to be an artist and didn't know what medium, and he went off to become an artist and didn't want to have that kind of connotation of being a traditional potter, if you will. However, he realized that that pottery was really in his soul and came back to it. He experimented with a number of kinds of ceramic work, but had seen in a collection in Osaka a beautiful, very small bowl that had been made with in porcelain with this beautiful Seihakuji glaze. And he looked at it and said, that's what I'm doing. But I'm not doing dishware. I'm going to make art with this. So he was one of the artists who took a traditional craft and moved it in a very, very modern direction.
Wow. And
so he was one of the early people who was very, very successful in doing that in ceramics.
So was he always in Japan at this time, or did he end up traveling? Like what was his education, I guess?
Yeah, he was most inspired, he says, in his artwork by artists in Italy. He loved Italian design. He went to Italy and he discovered that this is what attracted him most, and so he began to work in his own style, inspired by nature, actually, which it makes a good connection for us at the garden.
Yes.
Whatever we show, we like to draw parallels with the garden and the garden's aesthetic. He tells a story about one day standing on a cliff by the ocean and feeling this very piercing, sharp, cold breeze. And suddenly it hit him the style that he needed to pursue. And when you see his work, it has very, very hard edges, and yet it appears to be wings of a bird in flight, though not literally. It just appears to soar. And all of the titles of his work have some kind of reference to in the sky, et cetera. So it's a...
Yes, I have an exhibition list here. Space, hope,
yes.
Wind, upright, clear, daybreak, the void... Very nice. So I have a quote from him. I seek to capture the place where the sky and the sea meet, the something that is heading out into the ocean's horizon.
Right.
So this, he must have got this at that moment.
Yes, and he's referred to it ever since as the pivotal moment in his career. He's won more awards, international awards and national awards in ceramic art than any other artist in Japan.
So do you think he has, well, there's a couple of things that are on my mind. He's probably gained a lot for just ceramic artists in general because he's pushing that. He's on the forefront of pushing it from take out the ceramic mm-hmm. and just call it art.
That's right.
Right? So that's something he's fighting for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a challenge for Japanese artists whose work is based in a traditional craft form.
Mm-hmm.
Today there are so many wonderful artists who've taken everything in a new and an exciting direction, and Fukami is certainly one of them, perhaps the most successful of all.
So in the exhibition, there are a group of smaller works that were the ones that were on loan, I believe, like that fabulous tea set. Can we just talk about some of the works that are there?
There is a set of, they're actually sake cups and a sake server.
Sorry, sake,
tokuri.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is absolutely the first time he's ever shown some of that kind of work together with his art, because he does like to make the distinction.
Yes. This was a big thing for him to do that, I imagine.
It was. And I had to talk him into it. But because I think the comparison is interesting to see that, of course, he's a master potter.
Mm-hmm.
The large cone-shaped objects in the exhibition, some, 3 feet wide.
That big piece in the middle.
Cones, yes.
Yes.
Those are thrown on a potter's wheel, and that is an amazing feat. They are enormous. And
yes.
All of the potters who are seeing this show are
blown away.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
And so, but the fact is that he did come from that background, and it's easy for him to throw small objects. Every January, he makes a limited set of sake cups.
Really?
that go on sale in Japan. Around that time in Japan, people buy sake cups to celebrate the new year, but just a very limited number of them. And then he has some that he gives away as gifts to people, but he does not do any production
otherwise.
Pottery now.
So so let me ask you, how does one get those sake cups that come out on January? Is it that he's
you
just,
have to be in Japan.
You have to be in Japan, but I mean, yeah. Is he selling them at a museum, or are these, like, how does one find out about that? Just for those of us who have seen that exhibition and love that work.
Yeah. That work is not available widely in the United States
right.
at all. And so there are department stores
oh.
in Kyoto that
wow.
feature his work with the work of other artists
okay.
around that
uh-huh.
time of year. And that's
mm-hmm.
the only way I know of, besides to be given a gift from the artist.
Right. So it's an interesting marriage between commerce and art.
Well, and what he says he took away from his traditional family is the production method that is used to make these pieces.
Okay.
They're molded rather than hand-built.
Right.
There are some wheel-thrown and then sculpted boxes that he had on view there, but the larger pieces, and there are some very large 6-foot-tall spires there, one of which belongs to Stephen Tishavalam. The other one is a new piece from the artist studio. The new piece from the artist studio is from the same series as the one that was just purchased by the Metropolitan Museum of Art
mm-hmm.
in New York earlier this year, and it's on view in the Met, and it's on view, I'm very pleased to say, at the Portland Japanese Garden. He does limited editions of 8 pieces, and he doesn't make them all at once. He makes one,
uh-huh.
and it goes on display somewhere or is sold. And these days, most things are made by him on custom orders. So they're made in a mold that requires a very complex and sophisticated vacuum process that is based on what his family used to do production work, but in order to make something as big as what he makes,
right.
It's impossible to do that on successfully with hand built.
Right. So let's talk about just a couple in particular. So right here in the catalog,
mm-hmm.
for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if this is the actual catalog. This is a really
mm-hmm.
great little folder that we have that you
mm-hmm.
can get when you go to the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So the cover has this beautiful image that kind of goes to a point that looks like a wave, but like a wave you've never seen.
Yes.
And then you open up the brochure and you see the entire piece, which is, whoa, is this a vase? Is this a plate? Is this a wave? What is this? So I think it's good just to maybe just talk about one piece and how it's made.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's quite large, no, this particular piece?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Talk to us a little bit just about it.
It's about 2.5 feet across, and it's a wing-shaped sculpture. It's on a wooden base it's mounted on, and it was produced by this mold technique. And what he does is to create a mold in three pieces, and this is typical of all his work, and make the model for the mold, make the mold, and then through the vacuum, this vacuum process, he inserts a porcelainous material that is a little bit more pliable than porcelain itself.
Okay.
It's a mixture of clay with porcelain.
But the color's not in it yet, right?
No, right. This
right.
is just the white porcelain base.
Right.
And then when the mold is fired slowly and then cooled very, very slowly, because if it cracks, it's finished and he has to start again. So once he has a finished form that he's happy with, then he takes planes, the kind of planes that you would work wood with, for example, but planes, and he also takes other kinds of small hand tools, and he actually carves into the pieces
to make it smoother.
To make it smoother.
So fine.
So it's so refined. He doesn't like to see the touch of the artist's hands on these peaches, which is interesting. It's perfection he's after.
Yes, and the name of this piece is called In the Sky, right?
In the Sky.
Sorani?
Sorani.
Sorani. In the Sky.
Yes.
So then he glazes it. Then he's putting a color on it, painting
it. Yes, that's right. He actually sprays the glaze on and thicker and thinner in different areas, so that the thicker areas have a darker tone to them.
Uh-huh.
They're just exquisite.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. If you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you can see more information about my guest. Yes, and also, if you go back through the schedule, you can listen to audio files of tons of interviews that we've done here. I've been here about 5 years. I'm also working with Joseph Gallivan. Just wanted to give a shout out to him. He's like working on this show with me. He is the co-host. He's here every other week. And thank you, Joseph. And he's done some really interesting interviews as well. And we're really happy to have him here. Today, I have with me Diane Durston. She is the curator at the Portland Japanese Garden. And she's been on with us before because they have so many great shows. And I guess this would just be a good time to mention that the garden is 50 this year, yes?
That's right.
So this exhibition, it was kind of, there's a trilogy from what I understand. Mm-hmm. There was Noguchi.
Mm-hmm.
What a show. This show, and what else?
Earlier this year, there was a Toko Shinoda exhibition of prints and paintings. She's an extremely famous artist who began working even in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
She turned 100 years old this year, and she's still working every day.
Oh, my.
Amazing woman, and one of the earliest female artists to be successful in New York. She made her career in New York, and we had her work earlier this year, then the Noguchi exhibition in collaboration with the Noguchi Museum in New York.
Totally hot show.
It was wonderful, and thank you to Joseph and to Kebu for helping us get the word out there.
Uh-huh.
And then this is the culmination of our year of special exhibition programming for the 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. You have some special events and things. This would be a good time to mention them for the listener.
We do. So coming up next week, in fact, next Wednesday on October 16th at the Portland Art Museum in the Crydell Grand Ballroom, we have some wonderful musicians coming from Japan who perform on the Tsugaru Shamisen. It's a stringed instrument. It's amazing. And they're performing in a group called the Wagokoro Brothers.
Uh-huh.
They have also taiko drum with them. It's a trio, the Shamisen player, the taiko drummer, and a DJ who is right now one of the hottest DJs in Tokyo. So it's a wonderful concert. It's open to the public, and tickets are on sale through our website. If you go to our website or to the Portland Art Museum's website, you can purchase tickets there. They're $20. 25 for non-garden or museum members. And we just hope lots of people come. The seats are selling out quickly. And if you've ever seen the Yoshida brothers, the star of our group, Wagokoro, is now considered the best shamisen player in Japan.
Whoa.
So he's a very young man, and his music is amazing. He does both very traditional music and with his new band. So join us for that.
Yes.
We also have, on October 19th, that weekend, we have a gala event that celebrates the garden's 50th anniversary. You can also learn about that on our website.
Uh-huh. Is there special performances that are going with that? It's fine for you to say.
The same artist is going to perform there.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So so how long does this exhibition up? This just opened, the Fukami show.
Yes, it just opened this last Saturday. This exhibition's up until November 17th.
Uh-huh. And what might happen after that, just to give us some plans?
So in the future, we're looking at bringing young artists next year, some young artists and some very interesting people doing work in things like lacquer, another traditional craft that's going in all kinds of new directions now with young artists. And it should be exciting. So watch our website for next year's exhibition cycle.
One thing that we didn't really discuss a lot were the actual photographs of Jean Volum, which this without her, this show wouldn't have probably happened.
That's right.
So just tell us a little bit about what are in the photographs. I mean, I'm definitely seeing the icy blue, but what are we actually looking at here? What did she go out and do?
Well, Jean, who started to work with photography in her 60s, would go out on a Zodiac boat. She was very interested after a trip to Antarctica, I believe, was her first trip out in a Zodiac boat and took photographs. And then,
what is that for those of us who don't know?
A Zodiac boat is well, it's the kind of boat you see out in the Arctic Ocean with their bright orange and their inflatable boats. They look like something you'd never want to be in the Arctic Ocean inside of.
Right. Rather
very
fragile.
Open air, very vulnerable to all of the elements. And she rode along in one of those boats and took photographs of ice floes there and in other parts of the world. When she first went to Fukami's studio, she took one of her photographs as a gift for him. And that as soon as he saw it, he knew.
They were friends.
They were on the same beam, as it were, because the piece that she gave him is just one very thin sheet of ice going across the center of a field of ocean and sky. And that's this distant view that they seem to...
How does she find out about him? Like, what was the story with that? Because she's from Portland. She goes to Japan.
Yes. There are many collectors of Fukami's work in the United States. The most, the largest collection is at the Clark Center for Japanese Art and Culture, located in Hanford, California. Oh. And Bill Clark had collected 80 pieces of Fukami sculpture. And she had gone to see the Clark Center and saw his work there and just completely fell in love with it. And Bill Clark put her in touch with Fukami. She went to meet him in his studio in Japan, and she became one of his best collectors. And I think because they so much appreciated each other's artistic vision, their friendship deepened until she passed away a few years ago.
It's got to be really satisfying for you, Diane Durston, you've met an artist in the 80s, who now you are curating into a beautiful world-class exhibition.
Well, it really is, Eva. I can't tell you how wonderful it's been to have that opportunity at the Portland Japanese Garden. I feel that the garden itself is a work of art, and other works of art and other mediums are also tell us a lot about Japanese culture and people's worldview. And so I'm thrilled that there is that opportunity. I never imagined that my old friend Fukami-san would be coming to Portland so many years later.
Yes.
That's right.
So I always like to, I think I might have asked you this before, but who knows when that was, a year ago. Mm-hmm. How does one become the curator of the Japanese Garden? Let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you lived in Japan. You wrote books about Japan.
Yes.
So how did that all happen? Did you study Japanese
art? It's been an interesting path. I studied art in college, but not Japanese art. I mm-hmm. discovered Japanese art when I was working as a designer in Honolulu for a while, and then decided to go off traveling and wanted to go to Japan after what I had experienced in Hawaii in terms of seeing Japanese ukiyo-e, woodblock prints, and different things. So went off to stay 6 months in Japan and spent 18 years there.
And
so it's a fascinating culture. It's fascinating.
You went off the deep end.
I did. I truly did. And I'm really glad I did. Yeah. Sometimes you have to go off the deep end to get where you need to be.
That's it.
And then I came back to the U.S. and I had a job at the Portland Art Museum for 5 years. And one day I was working there and Steve Bloom, who was then the new executive director, now CEO of the Portland Japanese Garden, called and said, I'm new in town. Would you show me the Japanese collection there? And I said, certainly. He came by my office and I showed him around. And as he was leaving, he said, you know, I'm looking for someone to do some new things with us at the garden. If you know of anyone, would you let me know? And I said, can I come by your office tomorrow?
Yes.
Because I loved working for the Portland Art Museum, but my work there was across the board in different types of art. I was curator of education there. But when it came to the opportunity to do a Japanese cultural and art programming, I just leapt at the chance. So
fantastic. And I know we can't talk lots about it, but I would like to just mention that there's going to be an expansion at the garden. Yes.
Yes. It's in the planning stages now. We're still early in the game, as it were. But
yes.
We've realized over the last several years that as we receive more and more visitors to the garden each year with uh-huh. new things going on there, we need to make sure that the tranquility in the garden is maintained as it has been for the last 50 years. And so it became obvious that we would need to move some things out of the garden, some
yes.
activities outside, and we began to look at creating a new kind of center, a mm-hmm. village, if you will, just outside the gates. So
I love the idea.
There won't be a change to the garden itself.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
wonderful, but
yes.
outside, we've been talking with a very famous architect named Kengo Kuma about designing these buildings that would be his first public building in the U.S.
And you'll have maybe even a better exhibition space. Who knows?
Well,
or more. How about that?
That's right.
How about more?
There will be a gallery
yes.
included in
and
that
And a
space.
Place to have tea.
That's right.
I'm loving that. We need to have tea at the Japanese garden.
Absolutely.
And I imagine it'll be the very best kind, too. No compromise there.
Absolutely not. Just like the garden.
Like everything else. Well, Diane Durston, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Ava. I really appreciate the chance to get the word out.
So we've been talking about an exhibition that's at the Portland Japanese Garden, A Distant View. It's ceramics by Fukami, and there's also accompanying photographs by Jean Vollum. And this exhibition closes in November?
November 17th.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ava.
Yes. Thanks for listening to Art Focus. And I'll be off for about a month here because there's so much going on here at KBOO, but Joseph Galavan will be here. And when I come back at the beginning of November, it's going to be a really great show. So stay tuned. I'm Ava Lake, and thanks for listening to Art Focus.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor two presentations by Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert. Nicole is a big picture thinker in the areas of finance, energy, and the environment, and Lawrence is an inspiring and energetic community organizer from New Zealand. Together, they'll be talking about the smart, simple, and creative ways people are reinventing our world using tools like local currencies, collaborative consumption, green projects, and political organizing. Nicole Foss and Lawrence Bomert will be speaking at 7 p.m., October 9th, at the First Congregational Church, 4515 Southwest West Hills Road in Corvallis, and again at 7 p.m. on October 10th at Tabor Space, Southeast 55th and Belmont in Portland. More information can be found on the right-hand side of kboo.fm under Community Events.